This is Michael Hansen. The Mind Web story for this half hour is The End of the World Rag by Jack Haldeman II. It's a story that comes from Fantastic magazine of December 1977. A game for children. The monster lives in paneled walls, bars, baseball stadiums, and public houses of all descriptions across the country. He is imaginary tentacles taking things away from people. He is imaginary teeth devouring things that should be allowed to live. We who are still alive know his sting and felt his bite. He dwells in the chambers of our hearts like a black disease. This is his story, our story, a true story, a fable for children of all ages. It's a story of how the world ended and why nobody cared. The band was playing a slow song in three-quarter time. Nobody in the room knew what it meant. The television announcer had not been specific. I was reading a newspaper account of a large black dog. I missed the girl. On a normal evening, she would be fixing us a cup of coffee, but she was gone. Had been gone for months, so I suppose it was normal that she was not fixing a cup of coffee at the time. Still, it didn't feel normal. I wanted a cup of coffee. I wanted her near me. I believe the word normal had lost its meaning by that time. But that didn't bring her back or fix my coffee. The dog was huge. I believe it was 6:30. I don't remember the day or even the month. I am unsure of the year. I could tell the time because the second edition of the news had just started. At this late date, what difference could it possibly make to pin down the day, the time? Things happen. It's over now, in our past. One time's just like another, once it's past. Everything is history, especially what's happening now. I drink my water, and I eat my tasteless tubers. To put things in some sort of perspective, it was about 6:30 when I first noticed the monster. I wanted coffee, I wanted a girl, I wanted all the things that had at one time or another been taken from my life. I suddenly felt like an empty file cabinet. Someone had taken everything out, piece by piece, folder by folder. Everything was gone, and I felt empty, hollow. And that was when I first realized the monster had taken it all. That was when I read about the large black dog with the sad eyes. Of all the people who come and go in this house, there are only two I can really talk to. There's Bill, but he was playing his guitar in the kitchen that night. And there's Doris, but she was quietly sewing something. I guess that's about all. There have been others, but they're all gone now. Many other people come and go, and I no longer feel I can talk to them. I've learned that they only hurt me, so when they come, I sit in the dark corners and interact as little as possible. About the only one I could tell about the monster was Bill, but he was busy, and, as I found out later, he already knew all about it. I have theories. Like all theories, they're based on certain assumptions, which may or may not be true. But I also have certain facts to go by. I miss football games. They're no longer on TV. There are other things I miss at odd times. I miss margarine. I'd already missed butter. I miss quiet rides and sunsets. I miss, oddly enough, quiz shows, though I never watched many of them. They have joined the great mass of things that are gone, things I was only marginally aware of, but things that are no longer there. Doesn't anyone care but me and occasionally Bill? There's nothing on television now but news, 24 hours a day. Even with seven stations, it's not enough to carry all the news, at least what passes for news these days, so the papers are delivered five times a day. Yeah, the newspapers carry too much news. I've written several letters to the editor concerning that fact. They are all printed. They often spell my name wrong. It's not the quantity of news, you understand. It's only that all the news is bad. It concerns tragic things that happen to ordinary people. There is never any news of national affairs or the government. I can't remember if there is still a government. There's only news of ordinary people that are much too much like myself for me to feel comfortable. The things that hurt them hurt me. There are often close ties between myself and the things that disturb them. And this, in turn, disturbs me. I never feel comfortable reading the news. And I read it all day long. The newspapers used to carry a lot of this human interest, I believe they called it in their own ironic way. I still remember the way things used to be, though everything has changed, and no one seems to care but me. I remember that in between the personal tragedies, there was often news of seemingly larger importance. I guess people learned, as I'd always suspected, that these events of seemingly larger importance were trivial to most people. It seldom affected their lives. The really important things were personal. The loss of love, death of close people, the loss of a job, the changing of things that were. These were the really important events in people's lives, and it didn't take long for the networks and the people who run those large presses to reach the same conclusion. These are all things the monster has brought to pass. There are others. I believe that someone in the house was divorced and had a small girl child who visited him at irregular intervals. Occasionally, I saw a smaller face walking around, and at those times, the television was often tuned to cartoon shows and situation comedies. I generally didn't watch them because they had so little to do with real life. But sometimes on Saturday mornings, I'd find myself watching small animated creatures hurt each other in the cathode screen. It was a lot like looking into a mirror. And sometimes on dark nights, I even miss the Vietnam War. It wasn't much of a war, but for a while it was the only one we had. It also had a lot to do with the monster. Oh, I don't actually miss the war. It was messy. What I miss are the good things that went with it. We marched for peace. We held demonstrations. We said a lot of words. We were thrown in jail for honorable causes. We felt good. But the food was bad. I remember being in jail once, but it was a long time ago. I can't seem to recall whether or not it had anything to do with the war. It could have been a false arrest. I've paid a lot of debts to society in one way or another, most of them for other people. But all the noble causes and noble words just fed the monster. He grew stronger. The war ran down like a broken clock. The troops that were still alive came home, and most of us thought that it was a very good thing indeed. How little we knew. The nation had grown tired of the war, weary of trying to handle every other nation's troubles. Things started to get diffused shortly after that. Who cared about Cambodia? Where actually was Thailand? And why wasn't it still called Siam? Was Guam one of ours or one of theirs? It was confusing. None of this really mattered. We salved our national conscience by importing war orphans by the thousands and housing them in deserted beer halls. Did they sleep on the pool tables? I forget. Like Beatle music or Paris fashions, they were absorbed into the fabric of American life. They're much older now, and nobody thinks about them. I also quit thinking much about South America. Various countries in Eastern and Western Europe drifted away from me. It was a whole lot easier not to think about these countries. They disappeared from the news and the thoughts of most people. I'm sure they don't think much of us either. We have records and a few books. We never play the records and seldom look at any part of the books except their spines. The records are old. We haven't bought any new ones in years. Haven't felt like buying any in years. I seriously doubt that they're still being manufactured. The books, they're only half there. Back in the old days, back before all the branching effects were apparent, Bill and I thought we could help people. Reach out and touch them when they needed something. We would tear pages from the books and send them to friends who lived in other cities and were having problems. It never helped any of them. It never helped us. The monster was already too strong. The books remain on our shelves, half-eaten reminders of someone else's wisdom and feelings. They're useless. We never look at anything but their spines. I wrote some of the books. I never look at them either. the monster has bitten me too deeply. All the people I ever loved have moved away from me. I sit and read newspaper accounts of tragic things that happen to people I don't know. It takes a lot of my time. I miss the girl. I wonder about the dog. The bars today have changed. They're always depressing. Nobody talks to anyone. Even the bartenders are wrapped in silence. Sad old ladies sit quietly hunched over glasses of warm beer. I went to one 3 years ago, last December. It was my birthday. And I really wanted to do something different. I went by myself and talked to no one. The bar had three doors inside, marked men, ladies, and keep out. There was a broken wagon wheel out front, and the floor was littered with dead flies. I drank two beers and walked home. I haven't been out of the house since. I believe that was where I saw the dog. It was foggy, and as I walked home, I noticed a man coming out of the fog towards me. He was on the other side of the road and was pushing an empty wheelbarrow. He stopped in front of a faded billboard to pet a large black dog. It could have been the same dog, maybe not. All I can remember were the dog's sad eyes. The man was old. He could have been my brother. Maybe he was. I haven't seen my brother in years. He'd look like that now. The wheelbarrow was empty. The dog's eyes had seen too many things. I used to sit on seawalls and old logs in sunny places with my red portable typewriter and write stories and books that said things that were important to me. It's no longer possible to communicate that way. It was hard even back then. You couldn't say things that people didn't want to hear. It's impossible now. They don't want to hear anything at all. Everyone has a tight cocoon of artificial invulnerability wrapped around them. The monster has seen to that. I remember topless bars. I never went to one. I remember credit cards, especially credit cards, small pieces of plastic that had something to do with money and a lot to do with debts and lifestyles. I remember one night, it might have been the night of the orphans, when I had just returned from a long trip. I'd driven hours and miles to the far end of the sea for no other reason than to have painful things happen to me. I charged the gas on the credit card of a major oil company. And I charged the motel room on the same card. I charged all the painful things away on a small, broken piece of plastic. I figured I'd pay for it later. I eventually did. But that's another story. As I was watching the news on television that night, all drained, weary, sad, depressed, and hurt, the president of that same major company came on the news and said cheerful things about recent profits in the oil industry. He made a lot of money off my pain. He smiled a lot. The monster dug hungry claws into my flesh that night. He had been working overtime. Telephone bills were important once, too. They were important about the same time and in the same way as credit cards were important. They both had a lot to do with money and pain. When things would get bad for me, I never had any money, and there were always people in faraway cities that I needed to talk to. There were people in other cities who felt it necessary to call me. They usually said things that either hurt me or made me sad. The phone company charged me a flat rate. They made a lot of money off the things that hurt me. There is some dispute as to whether the actual physical presence of the monster began in Florida or Kentucky, but I won't get into that. It's a fact of questionable importance. It is a life form, perhaps a death form. It is alien. It is everywhere now. Everything else is unimportant. I miss my daughter. It may surprise you to know that I was married once. It was a long time ago. I was married in a county courthouse in Rockville, Maryland, and divorced in another county courthouse in Clearwater, Florida. A lot of things happened between those two visits to county courthouses. 10 years passed. People don't get married anymore. My daughter lived with me for a while. She grew up under the shadow that covers the land like oily, rancid peanut butter. When she was grown, at least partially so, she left. And she's trying to find other things in other places. I know she won't find them, and it depresses me. The things she'll find will corrupt and destroy her. She was such a nice person, too. I was sorry to see her go. Watergate was the next outward sign of the monster. I don't imagine you're old enough to remember anything about Watergate. It was the name of an apartment complex in the city up the road called Washington. Some important people did some very bad things there and were caught at it. Even after everybody knew that these people had done bad things, they continued to disavow their actions. They plotted ways to deny their guilt. They fooled no one but themselves. They didn't even fool themselves very long. It was on television every day. The papers were full of news. It affected people in high places. It saturated people with immense problems of a national nature. The news about it was long and drawn out. It lasted several years. We grew very tired of it. Like trying to worry about wars in hot countries, it became too much of a burden. Some papers printed Watergate news in special detachable sections so it could be easily ignored. The front pages of these papers were full of local events and contained nothing of national or universal importance. It was the first of many steps for the noble newspaper industry, that vigilant watchdog of our personal freedom. Our front yards littered with abandoned automobiles. One's mine, the red convertible. Nobody drives anywhere these days. I doubt that gasoline is still being produced. The cars were left here by misguided people who at one time or another wandered by this house with hopes of escaping the monster. It was a futile gesture, but they tried anyway. The cars cover the yard like rusting, broken dreams. One car, the flashy roadster, belonged to a performer in a local underwater attraction. She was a mermaid and sometimes played other parts. It has a broken transmission. The girl broke down shortly afterwards. Neither has been fixed. The house is situated on the edge of a pine grove, and several vehicles of larger dimensions rest just on the other side of the trees. There are three vans, outfitted as campers, and a rusting school bus. At one time, people lived inside them, but I believe they've long since moved on. I'm not completely sure of that. I haven't checked in years. Most of the cars were abandoned during the Great Migration. Unemployment had risen to over 80% by that time, and many discouraged people hit the road in search of other things. They found other things, but they were seldom any improvement. I considered them refugees, victims of the then undefined monster. They lived in rough camps, drifted south in the winter and north in the summer. Many were lost along the way. Many were hurt by unsympathetic people. They tried to be happy and only fooled themselves with temporary things. I was powerless to help them. Like sand in a gigantic sieve, many of these people drifted southward to settle. Key West, Galveston, San Diego were prime areas for the new refugees. They slept in cars, on beaches and forests and deserted buildings. There were too many of them. There was no work. There was no money. There was only the monster. And the monster eventually provided its own form of destructive welfare. It fed the refugees, and that was the worst thing that could have happened to them. It feeds us now, too. It feeds everyone. And in turn, it feeds off of us. It takes things away from us, things like hope, initiative, and love. It also took baseball trading cards, bubblegum, and Grand Prix races. But these were all secondary effects, shadows, so to speak, of the real monster. During the early stages of the Great Migration, I traveled to one of these camps in order to find a friend who had cast her lot with these people, and I cared about her. I had questions to ask her. I also had questions only I could answer. It was a foolish thing to do. The camps held no answers at all. The girl was lost in shadows. I was so drunk and depressed that I seemed to fit in with the rest of the refugees. I believe they thought I lived there. For some obscure reason, one of them asked me if I had any poetry for a wedding that was to take place that evening. Now, I happened to have a collection of Carl Sandburg poems with me. I'd brought them to show the girl. I found an appropriate poem and tore it out, gave it to them. They invited me to the wedding at the edge of the sea at sundown. I took my beer and a flower. All the men wore ties. They didn't wear shirts, but they all wore ties. Everyone was drinking beer. I wondered where they got so many ties. The groom arrived in a red van. He was wearing a pair of cut-off jeans and an engineer's hat. He was drinking Schlitz. I put my flower in his hair. They read the poem, stumbling on the words, missing the inflections. I don't believe they were used to reading. They romped in the water. The minister was drinking Budweiser and smoking a joint. Everybody laughed. It was a sham the bride was drinking a local beer. After the wedding, the entire party adjourned to the restrooms. They had consumed a lot of beer. Someone started playing an electric guitar inside the men's room. Everybody danced. In a fit of depression, I tore all the pages out of the poetry book and left it for other weddings, divorces, and funerals. I'm sure they made good use of it. I turned my back on the refugee camp. I never went back. I never saw the girl again. All I can remember is the tears in my eyes. Later, I had occasion to go to a divorce in the town down the road. The lawyers sat around and talked about hurricanes and fishing. The man was represented by a paper bag propped up at one end of the long, polished table. Someone had drawn a smile on the paper bag. It seemed appropriate. No one asked the bag any questions. Though I was asked how long I had known it, I answered as best I could. Afterwards, we all went to a baseball game. The home team lost, but they didn't make any errors. The paper bag had four hot dogs and looked distracted from the third inning on. All the little rituals of life, marriages, bar mitzvahs, divorces, christening ceremonies and such, they all dissolved into parodies of themselves. They became meaningless. They are no longer performed, even in the most civilized places. Eventually, all formal organizations and social services disintegrated. It didn't take long once it started. Social organizations cracked under the strain. There were too many people to take care of. The system wasn't built to handle such a burden. Checks were lost in the mail. Food was diverted to the wrong people. By this time, nearly the entire country was on some form of public assistance. Strictly speaking, there wasn't any public left. It was only a matter of time. About this time, we had a fire in the woods near our house. I called the fire department, and they wouldn't do anything. They said they couldn't put out the fire unless it involved a house or a place of business. I called the forestry service. They were aware of the fire, but couldn't do anything without state approval. The state hadn't approved any firefighting action in years. They seldom even answered their phone. I should have guessed. A heavy rain eventually put the fire out, but not before it had destroyed several hundred acres. A few months previous to the fire, I had noticed that birds' nests were disappearing. They were huge osprey nests, many over 10 feet wide. They had been there for years. They had survived hurricanes. Overnight, they were gone. The local forest ranger shrugged. The Audubon Society was unconcerned. The ospreys are gone now. They never came back. The only birds I ever see are vultures circling the sky or roosting in the crooks of dead trees. I've forgotten how to do a great many things. I'm not alone. Many of the things I used to do seem so trivial now. I stopped them, and soon I forgot how to do them at all. Some of them were things I enjoyed. I used to know how to play the guitar. I was a fair basketball player, even had 2 years of semi-pro ball in a small southern town. It's all gone now. Bill assures me he has forgotten how to paint. We both feel vaguely sad about that. He was a good painter. But we're somewhat relieved to see that it is apparently a universal effect. During the last stages of the Great Migration, a lot of the physical problems were solved by the first concrete manifestation of the monster. Food and water were provided. It's still being provided. Every morning, the delivery of the first paper of the day is accompanied by a jug of water and a few small tubers. They look like potatoes, but they don't have to be cooked to eat. They're tasteless, but filling. We are never hungry. In cold climates, heat's provided along with the food. I've heard of people up north freezing to death because they forgot or did not care to turn on the heat. I'm not surprised. There are people down here who just stop eating. Food and water pile up on their doorsteps next to their papers. They die. The monster doesn't notice. And the food and water just keep stacking up. I believe the monster has lost the ability to tell the living from the dead. I have that problem myself these days. There were 12 suicides on television this week. Not reported suicides, but on-the-air suicides of reporters. I don't know why they bother. After the novelty of the first one, they aren't very interesting anymore. Yet I can't really blame them. There are a lot of suicides these days, and I guess if you're a television announcer, it's the natural place to do it. Still, it does interrupt the programming. There are continual replacements. People are always going on television to talk of their harrowing experiences. Everyone has had a lot of bad things happen to them. We enjoy hearing people talk of these experiences. They are seldom trivial, almost always emotionally crippling. They concern tragedies of a private and personal nature. We participate vicariously and are glad these things are happening to someone else. We seldom realize that similar things are happening to us. I often wonder how the television stations and newspapers keep functioning. Everything else has broken down in the last few years, including most of the people I know. Nothing gets fixed. Nobody wants to fix things, or perhaps like water pumps, they have forgotten how. We adjust. We live without many of the things we liked in order to keep a stable existence. It is somewhat uncomfortable, but functional in its own way. We have all withdrawn. It is, I hope, the final stage of the monster. We no longer interact with other people. We hold our hurts and fears tightly to our chests and push everything and everybody else away. It is universal. Everyone does this. We did it on a national level, and now we do this on an individual level. Many things have been lost, but we still survive. I grow old. Everyone grows old. There are no children. Even if there were children, no one would love them. We are too involved with our own problems. There are only the children's tales, the monster's games. He has built a jail without walls. He has killed a world. There are no tears left to fall. There is no one left to care. You've heard The End of the World Rag, a story by Jack Haldeman II, a story which appeared in Fantastic Magazine, December 1977. This is Michael Hansen. Technical production for this program by Kenya Hera and Tom Martinson. Mind Webs is a production of WHA Radio in Madison, a service of University of Wisconsin Extension. Thank you.